Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Monday morning at September 18th. 40 degrees here in Old Town Park City. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, Devin Lucy. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. We've got a pretty active week. It's going to feel a lot like fall, meteorological fall, beginning of the month here. And by the calendar, at least on Friday, it'll tell us it's going to be fall as well. And the weather is telling us for sure fall is really fully here. So we've got a bit of a breezy day. The winds could be up maybe 10 to 20 in Park City. But a warm one for the time of the year. We're going to be up to around 70, upper 60s to around 70 for the high temperature, staying away from any precipitation today. However, system drops in precipitation as soon as tomorrow. Feeling is for the Wasatch Front. If you travel down this direction from Park City, we're not looking for much in towards the Wasatch Front in the valleys here, just mostly cloudy skies. But the mountains should get some precipitation here tomorrow. So we're looking for mainly rain in Park City, but I have seen as high as in the altitudes of Alta, getting a little bit of snow, taking a look at their temperature profiles. High temperature tomorrow drops into the lower to mid-50s. Then right back up again on Wednesday as the system exits before a second one drops in. We're back up to lower to mid-60s. And then the second storm system this week is even colder. This one's the one that's associated with some pretty cold air. And Park City might even find some flakes if we get some precipitation lingering into the morning hours. When is it going to be at its coldest? As we look towards Thursday, chances showers and maybe a rumble of thunder first takes us to only highs to the mid-40s. Lower 40s for highs on Friday. Could see some morning flakes mixing in if we're down around 30 degrees, if not turning all snow at times. Then we'll start to wrap up precipitation as we head into this weekend. I just lingered into Saturday morning. And the high temperatures back up to pretty more typical conditions for fall season, right around 50 degrees on Saturday and Sunday. Again, those high temperatures towards Thursday and Friday to round out the week, though. Mid-40s for Thursday and lower to mid-40s for highs on Friday. And could watch for some of that morning snow to come back around. That'll do it for your ABC for Utah Pinpoint Forecast, Leslie.
Okay, Devin, thank you.
You're welcome.
KPCW News Time, 8:08.
This KPCW weather report is brought to you in part by the law firm of Christopher K. Greenwood.
This is Brenda with Republic Services, your local provider for recycling and garbage collection. Information about what is acceptable to put in your curbside recycling bin can be found at summitcountyrecycles.org. Please help Summit County be clean. Remember to recycle.
It's 8:08. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Stay tuned. I'll be talking with Park City residents Elsa and Dick Gary, the founders of the nonprofit Voterize, whose mission is to encourage Utah millennials to register to vote. Superintendent Amber Conley in to discuss agenda items for the school board meeting tomorrow. Park City Community Foundation Programs Director Ollie Wilder will be in along with this year's recipient of the Tricia Worthington Community Service Award, Meg Still, and finally be talking with Snyderville Basin Recreation Director Brian Hatton. He'll have a monthly update. Stay tuned.
At All Seasons Resort Lodging, we get why you love Park City. It's our home, and it's why we support local radio with KPCW. Since 1999, our passion is helping second homeowners rent and care for their property with nightly rental management and HOA services. More information about our property management services at allseasonsresortlodging.com.
Well, the lottery for 19 affordable homes in Park City was a standing room only event last week that had seniors having the first pick. Park City has a goal of building 800 affordable housing units between now and 2026. Last Tuesday, the city held a lottery for the first of these affordable homes. Project manager Rhoda Stauffer says it was an amazing evening.
It was so much fun. So, yeah, it's always nerve-wracking, but fun. It just makes me crazy that I can't sell a house to every one of the people that were in the room. But unfortunately, we don't have that many to sell yet.
The four tiers went in order of priority, seniors getting the first pick. Even so, there was a diverse lineup of those who will soon call Park City home.
We've got two seniors that won the right to buy several units. We have healthcare workers, teachers, and everything in between. We have property management employees. And, you know, it's all across the spectrum, from the ski tuner, is one of the guys that was there last night, to the concierge front desk, and housekeeping even, and free clinic employees.
As for what's next for these new homeowners, Stauffer says it's a process.
We have to finish some regulatory things on both projects. Construction has to be finished on both projects. So we aren't ready to set a date for when actual sales contracts will be signed, but it will depend on, you know, how construction projects are. Sometimes they get delayed. We're hoping late fall for 1450, 1460, and by the end of the calendar year for Central Park condos.
Although they don't have a date set for another lottery, staff is already looking at what needs to change for the next one.
I don't know that we'll do the tiers the way we've done this one. That's yet to be seen because council will set priorities for the next units. What we are going to, we've learned a lot from the applications we got about what the needs are out there, and that will change maybe how we'll focus, like what income limits and what size households on the next units.
Park City isn't alone when it comes to a lack of affordable housing. Stauffer says similar communities are figuring it out just like Park City is.
We all are experiencing very similar issues, and we're all tackling affordable housing in a myriad of ways, and some of us copy each other. But I wouldn't say that there's a community that we're copying. I think what we do, especially with City Tour and some of the other things, is we learn from each other. But some of the stuff we do can be pretty unique.
Despite only 19 people getting a home at the lottery, Stauffer says she was touched by the generous spirits of everyone there.
I think people in the room were both celebrating and feeling bad for people who weren't getting units. But it was sort of a party atmosphere. It kind of surprises me. When we did Snow Creek Cottages 7 years ago, I was also surprised. The whole room was just celebratory, even though there were people in the room not getting homes. It's just a really good feel.
If you're interested in being put on the list for affordable housing, Stauffer says you can email her at rhoda.stauffer, S-T-A-U-F-F-E-R, @parkcity.org, or contact Mountainlands Community Housing Trust. They also have an affordable home program. KPCW News Time now, 8:13.
This is Ryan Hoffman, manager at Mountain West Bank, sponsor of KPCW. We're a community bank with a great understanding of our local needs. Mountain West Bank has something unheard of nowadays, but I can't say it on the radio. We're next to the movies near Kearns Boulevard at 649-3369. Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Cookies on Fridays.
Support for KPCW programming comes from Sammy's Bistro on Bonanza Drive, open daily at 11 a.m., sammysbistro.com. Peterson Calder Real Estate, Berkshire Hathaway, selling Park City since 1989. ExperienceParkCity.com. The Beach House, now open at Promontory Ranch Club, promontoryclub.com. Done to Your Taste Catering, 22 years perfecting life's celebrations. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Well, still to come this hour, I'll be checking in with the superintendent of Park City Schools, Amber Conley. Later on, Park City Community Foundation Programs Director Ollie Wilder will be in, along with this year's recipient of the Tricia Worthington Award, Meg Still, and finally Brian Hanton with Basin Recreation will have his monthly update. First, sitting down here, I've got, September is National Voter Registration Month, and Park City Couple is working to see that everyone who should be registered gets registered. In the studio to tell us more about this and their organization, I have Elsa and Dick Geary. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
So
thank you.
Who wants to start and just tell us a little bit about Voterize, when it started, why you started it?
Well, it started in the end of 2015. And what was the final impetus, I guess, for starting it? Was the Citizens United Supreme Court decision, which just opened the floodgates for money to come in. And literally it did. I mean, there were billions of dollars were spent in the 2016 election. And our elections are in danger of becoming auctions. And we felt that there had to be some way to try and level that playing field. And in looking at the statistics, what we found was that the biggest hole was the 18 to 29s, or millennials, which goes up to 34. And they had the poorest. They're larger than the baby boomers. They could have the strongest voice, but they actually had the weakest voice. For instance, in 2014 midterms, which aren't as exciting as the others, the nationals, Only 8.1% of Utah's 18 to 29-year-olds voted, and that's horrible. The national average was still poor. It was 19.9%. So that is much lower on a national basis than the other demographics. So we decided, we thought that people who are young like that, and there's so many issues that really concern them directly, that they needed to get involved. And we also feel that if you're, the younger people have a more open mind, rather than to try and convince someone who's 50 years old, who's never registered or voted, you know, that it's a good idea. And it's easier to collect groups of 18 to 29s, you know, primarily through colleges, high schools, entertainment venues, et cetera.
So is this just a Utah effort or is this nationwide?
Our effort is Utah. I think that we are the only nonprofit in Utah that is based, so that whose mission is solely registration and voting.
So how does it work? I mean, do you just hold lots of events to make this happen? Or, I mean, what's the process?
Well, what we do is, yes, we do hold lots of events. We are working now to have reps on college campuses. We were involved in the music business, and the record labels all had reps on college campuses. And their job is to create events, to support events, to promote the concept of registration. And we're also going to high schools. We'll be at the Park City High School later in the month. And we go to entertainment events that are applicable to this demographic group. We go to businesses, you know, Utah now is the fastest growing state, and there's so many tech companies moving in here, and they're bringing with them younger people, and they all have to register because they've moved from someplace else. So we also go to businesses to register people, and social media is a very important part of what we're doing.
So Voter Rise, I mean, you have a staff, a small staff?
A very small staff. This year in particular, as we move into 2018 and 20, it will increase.
Okay. And how have you done? I mean, do you have some results in terms of how effective Voter Rise has been?
We do. Of our online and text registrants, 79.9% of them turned out to vote. So that's an exceptional number. We're very proud of that and excited for the future, because as we're able to get out and register more people, obviously the effect will quantumly increase.
And there's many, you know, there's all the interest, it seems, goes every 4 years to the national races. But the reality of it is that the local races really impact us more than the nationals. And, you know, for instance, here in Park City, where right now the campaign is going, and the three major issues seem to be the environment, the traffic, and the affordable housing. Well, Washington isn't going to solve any of those things for Park City. We've got to do it ourselves. And in order to really have a bigger voice, people have to get out, they have to register, they have to go and vote.
So do you make it very easy to register to vote? Is that the what's behind all of this?
Yes. I mean, people can register online. It takes 2 or 3 minutes. They can register by text.
And how's that done? They just text what?
They text Voterize to 788-683, and then the questions are fed to them.
And in Utah, one of the advantages also that Utah has is that you can pre-register at 16. You can't vote until you're 18, but you can pre-register. So when you turn 18, you're ready to vote.
And at least you can now. I mean, one of the kind of horrible things that has happened recently is the President's Election Commission, met last week and heard testimony about the impact of lowering the voting age from 21 to 18 back in 1971. And this, of course, was basically a result of the movement during the Vietnam era of the if I'm old enough to die for my country, I'm old enough to vote. And they actually had serious discussions about raising the voting age back to 21 and also instituting background checks for prospective voters. So,
and this was just last week?
This was last week. And so it's really important for young people to register to vote so they'll have the ability to have some influence on folks who are elected in the coming years. I don't think this will be an easy thing for the Election Commission to accomplish, but it's going to be, it could be a real big fight.
Well, I think that also another important issue with VoterEyes is that when you register through us, we have your, you know, we have your address and things like that, and we conduct a Get Out the Vote campaign too. So the registration isn't the end of it. We really follow up and try and give as much. We would like to educate, empower, and engage, you know. But you'll get a lot of information from us and a lot of impetus to go and vote, nonpartisan.
Yeah. And we're also doing a Pledge to Register campaign right now where people are signing up to pledge to register five other people.
Yeah. So back to you, back to the reason for this. I mean, you talked about just all of the new money that was being thrown into. But for you personally, I mean, you know, you're on the older side of the spectrum. And why was it so important to you that we get younger people part of the process?
We wanted to find a way to put the tired in retired, I think. because that's the available audience. That's the, I think, the audience that is easier to reach, I think more effectively, more efficiently. I think they have so many issues that are critical, that are going to impact their future. And we wanted these new voices. We wanted this new group to speak up.
Also, I mean, people, a lot of people say that, you know, when talking to millennials, like, you are the future of this country. Well, they're also the now of this country. And if they don't become engaged as they get older, I mean, the largest generation that our country has ever known will be non-participants, and that's really not okay.
Now, is the VoterEyes, is it considered a nonpartisan organization?
Yes.
Nonprofit, nonpartisan, 501c3.
And then how do you guys fund it?
And by the way, I was going to say, all donations are tax deductible. We fund it. We have a certain donors that have been very generous to us in the past, and there's a new application right now that Elsa will...
Yes, we've just launched a campaign that is based on something called trigger funding using a platform called GiveWhen. And basically the way that works is that people commit to donating a small amount of money, could be 10 cents, 20 cents, every time something happens. And in our case, that something is our voter registrations. So we are asking people to commit the small amount of money for every registration that we get, and it's compiled on a monthly basis, and it's maxed out at 300 registrations per month. So that if somebody says, yes, I'll help, I'll contribute 10 cents for every registration, the maximum monthly charge to them would be $30. And if we deliver fewer than 300 registrations, then it's based on that actual number.
Okay. And is that rotating or is it just for I just commit to a month?
Well, it's an ongoing commitment. This campaign runs through October of 2018. However, on a monthly basis, they will have the opportunity to opt out if they so choose.
Okay. And that you can find that on your website now?
Yes. They can access it through voterize.org. And that's VoterEyes with an S, VoterEyes. And right on the homepage, there is a donate via GiveWhen, very obvious box.
All right. As a nonprofit, I'm guessing you do use some volunteer folks.
Absolutely.
Can always use them then as well.
Very much needed.
And they, again, they can find more information on the website if they're interested in helping
yes.
you out. Okay. Anything else we should know?
No, I think that,
that's
you know,
great.
If we encourage people to go to the website, and if parents to will be at the high school, you know, to suggest to their sons and daughters that they go register, and we appreciate very much your having us here.
Sure. VoterRise.org. Okay. Elsa, Dick, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:26 still to come. We'll be checking in with the Superintendent of Schools, Amber Conley. It's the local news hour on KPCW.
The Colony at White Pine Canyon supports our local radio station, KPCW. Located in the center of Park City Mountain, the Colony's high alpine build-ready lots offer homeowners access to meadows, streams, and the Mid-Mountain Trail. Tour information and lot availability at thecolonywpc.com or 649-3411.
Beth here, owner of Peak Art and Frame, longtime supporters of KPCW. At Peak Art and Frame, we carry a wide variety of framing options, and our design staff can help with any project for your home, office, or gallery. Open Monday through Saturday and located in the Walmart Shopping Center, 649-0801 or peakartandframe.com.
It's 8:27 now. Good morning. Well, the Park City Board of Education meets tomorrow in regular session starting at 4 o'clock in the studio with a preview of the agenda. Superintendent Amber Conley, good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
First up, a quick budget update. We've got a number of hires that are planned for approval later on in the meeting, but can you give us just a kind of a snapshot of how that is impacting the budget? Or?
Right. So we came in about 2% under budget. Great job to our business department, as always. Todd Hauber is an incredible business administrator, best in the state, if not one in the nation. So we are excited to be able to present that to the board. Then there'll be also an update to the number of positions that the board approved this last June for this fiscal year, which of course included some robust additions to counseling, to special education, to the classroom, and of course, a district office with our assistant superintendent of student wellness. So we'll give them an update on who's been hired, what the budget is, if it's right, is on target, is what we thought it would be.
All right. This is also the year of Safe and Healthy, and you'll get a quick update from the associate superintendent, Ben Belknap, one of those who, of course, was just hired with his first 30 days. He'll be sharing documents for tiered support and the 501 flowchart. Can you tell us what that is?
Right. So when you look at academics, both behaviorally and academically, there is levels of intervention. So tier one, if you can just think that that's all. Tier two is some, and tier three is few. And so when you look at interventions, that's his background, definitely is in the social, emotional, behavioral area. So he'll be giving an overview of what basically his rundown is that we need to do to be able to provide better interventions for our students. And then, of course, right along that, he's been working directly with Dr. Einhorn, our Associate Superintendent of Teaching and Learning, and Julie Hastings, our elementary curriculum specialist, to then look at that same model for academics.
And then this 504 flowchart, that is just a process to follow,
right,
that we
so
don't have now?
We do have the process. This is an effort to get everything in writing and make it consistent across the district. As you know, we've had, and this is a nationwide trend, this isn't just a Park City trend, we've had an increase of the number of 504s that we are reviewing, evaluating, and now have in process. So for instance, the high school out of a class, a school of 1,200, we have about 100 504s. And then if you can back that up and say, well, that requires an annual meeting every year of at least an hour at the beginning of the year, I mean, you're starting to see the magnitude of what this is, just workload for requirements. And so this is an effort to provide some consistency, some efficiencies, and economies of scale.
And a 504, of course, just a specialized learning plan? Or is that
yeah, so it's a little bit different. Of course, it's not individualized education. It is an ability to allow students to access the normal curriculum. So, for instance, you can have a temporary 504 for a student that has had a bad broken leg where, you know, that he or she may need extra time to get to class, more bathroom breaks, et cetera. Or it could be something more severe like diabetic, students. Most of our diabetic students have a 504, and it's just being able to put some accommodations so that they can reach the curriculum.
All right. Mr. Belknap working more with teachers or students at this point?
You know, he is actually working mostly, I'm going to call it middle management, that middle management right now, being able to provide training to our administrators, to our coaches, to our interventionists. He's also went into some of our schools. He has a goal to be in all of our schools by October and do behavior training with all of our staff, including our paras. So you know what really works when you're in that cycle of coercion and you're in a power struggle with a student, or even, I'm going to say, even a teammate, what are the best ways to get out of those cycles?
Dr. Kathy Einhorn and Tim McConnell will be doing an overview of the two-year implementation plan to update the educator evaluation. Any idea what they're going to be proposing?
I am, and I'm super excited about this. One of the things that I've realized now starting my fifth year is everything in a system has to be aligned. And so when you look at the curriculum, the instruction, the assessments, and professional development, you have to have a tool to be able to measure those things that you're expecting. And as we looked at our current teacher evaluation, which is called JPASS, it was adopted out of Jordan, it is not meeting what we feel is needed under the professional learning community model. So we've went out and we've looked at a couple different models, and we'll be presenting the Marzano model, which is directly aligned with our professional learning communities model that really focuses on those three big ideas, which is a focus on learning, a building a collaborative culture, and focusing on results and the belief that all students can learn at high levels.
So is this in reaction to any state mandates, or it is required by the state to evaluate education?
Right, right. And actually, under ESSA, under our new, since No Child Left Behind is no longer and we're under new federal regulation, it actually loosened the grip on what school districts can do with teacher evaluation. And specifically in Utah, if you recall, Utah had a very specific model that you had to use. And so now, as long as we're able to prove, which this does, that this aligns to our educator leadership model of Utah, then we're able to use it.
So who's responsible for getting the feedback? And I mean, how frequently is that
right,
given?
Right. So, you know, we're doing this very thoughtfully and process driven. So this year, what it looks like is we're starting in October with some initial training with our admin and some teachers. And then it also includes reestablishing our educator effectiveness committee, which includes parents as well. So we're excited to be able to start that. We'll be working with our Park City Education Association to be able to get feedback from all of our teachers, make sure that we're not missing anything. Then the following year, what's even better in my mind is that we're going to be doing what we call a hold harmless year as we implement this pilot. Because we know that, you know, there's going to be situations that as we learn this system, as our teachers learn this system, that being able to possibly terminate someone based on this evaluation wouldn't be legal or ethical or moral. And so we're going to do a hold harmless. So this year is a pilot, or excuse me, as a training, getting ready. Next year is the actual pilot for all teachers, and then the following year is full implementation.
So what are teachers being evaluated on? I mean, at some point, the state legislature wanted test scores part of their evaluation.
Right. So that's still part of the model of Utah. And so we have been able to follow within that law. JPASS, our current system, does provide what we call an effectiveness score. We have to report those scores to the state every year. So that's, again, however, that the JPASS does not necessarily look, in our mind, the level of effective instruction that we want our teachers to be able to get to.
There will also be a report tomorrow on the initial overview of the human resource audit. What's that?
Right. So actually that we're going to postpone that until the following month. But thank you. We have reached out to a consultant as well as working within our own department. As our district has grown, and we've grown tremendously. If you look back in the last 5 years, We've added over 35 classroom teachers along with the additions that we've had this year. So that's getting close to 45 employees. As we look at our processes, both internally and externally, we knew that we needed to improve those. So this is using the model of continual improvement. And so we're looking at our policies, we're looking at our practices, and making sure that we have consistent, effective practices.
There will also be a final decision on the proposed district-wide safety improvements. We're talking about implementing ID badges, installing fencing, renovating front offices. So have we prioritized what gets done first?
Right. So I would say, first of all, it's very comprehensive, and I'm really excited. Again, you know that I was originally came from Colorado, and being trained right after Columbine and then with the Platte County hostage situation, it was a very different environment to ensure that all of our students are safe in the buildings and on our school grounds. And so then looking at our schools and our school grounds, we worked with Homeland Security back in 2013, and they did a massive report. In fact, I think the report's over 13 pages. And we've been able to check some of those items off of that report. However, we still have some issues around our front offices of being able to have a clear check-in system for parents, for visitors, making sure that all of our visitors into our school, that we're not letting anyone into our schools that shouldn't be there, as well as being able to provide some perimeter clear boundaries for our students. I know you're near McPullen, and that's an interesting location given our trees and how students can wander off. And so it's just an effort to be able to make sure our students are safe. So I would probably say, as we have presented this to the board, we do have enough money in the budget, in our capital budget, to reallocate. So that's going to actually be the question that the board is going to wrestle with. But we do have money to reallocate. And so high end, it's about $3 million to do everything. I think that there's some wiggle room in there to be able to reduce the costs a little bit. But it is making sure that all of our front offices look different. And so some of the buildings are more difficult than others. Trailside is a really interesting one of their front office, whereas McPullen's an easy fix. So we're going to ask that we do all of the elementaries first, have those ready by winter break, and then we'll work on the secondary schools. The high school's another really interesting, more difficult building, and so to have those finished by April break.
And in terms of the fencing, because we had this discussion before, kind of neighbors, some neighbors upset about that. Has there been any kind of outreach to neighbors about that?
Right. So we're starting the information out to everyone in our community. The board has made a decision that, yes, we are doing fencing. So let's get together and come and figure out what's going to be best for our kids to keep them safe, as well as recognize that we're a community that loves their open space. Parley's is probably the most challenging, given some of the easements that we have around that school.
So still to come.
Right. And I know that we are definitely, I know the board's working with getting some of that ready to go.
And then just in terms of training, will that be provided for teachers and staff?
We have already started that. We have increased our safety training for all of our teachers, our paraprofessionals, down into our transportation, our food service, and even our substitutes. We're going to be doing a lunch and learn. I invite everyone that wants to know a little bit about our protocols and how we train our students and our staff to come on October 5th from 12:15 to 1 at district office. And I'll be doing that overview. Also, if you're not able to make that, you can watch it on board docs, because it was provided to the board and we did the full training with the governing board as well.
Okay. Will we also be installing video cameras, or do we
already
have those?
We already have videos. One of the things that we have, but we haven't fully implemented, is if we were to go on what we call a lockout. And a lockout could be anything from there's an animal on the playground, we need to lock the perimeter doors, to there's criminal activity, some type, civil unrest outside of our school area, is that we have an alarm at the front office that if any of the perimeter doors were unlocked, propped open, that it will alarm the front office, and then also once the doors are closed, that we can put a magnetic, I'm going to call it a magnetic field, that's not the right words, but and that we can hit the alarm to go around those doors.
Okay. How are students and parents and faculty handling the additional trailer spaces?
You know, I haven't heard any real negative around those. I think the hardest thing that we have with those when we get into safety is making sure we have good safety protocols when we go into those, any type of those activities, lockout, lockdown. I would say probably one of the most challenging is the heating and the cooling in our cottages or our cabanas. I've heard some really interesting names, but our trailers.
Okay. And then just a reminder that coming up October 2nd will be the first public visioning session. Anything being done to prepare for that?
We are. We're sending out invitations. The board's going to be sending out invitations to their constituents. We're doing definitely a reach out to anyone and everyone that wants to be able to help us form that vision for the next 5 to 10 years. I also want to invite the community to our community tailgate for our homecoming. This is an opportunity that we can all come around our high school students and help them celebrate a great fun event. But the tailgate is this Friday, 5 to 6:45, right before the homecoming game. Bring your grills, bring some food, bring a picnic, and come out and join us there. I also have two shout outs. We have been notified that we're a finalist for one of our elementaries is the National Blue Ribbon Award. It's a national award for academic excellence. So we're anticipating and anxious that one of our elementary schools will be named. That'll be in November.
So what school is that?
I'm not able to tell you yet, but I will definitely, we're excited about that. And also a shout out to Megan Zarnetsky for being the presidential awardee for Utah for the science teacher.
Okay. Amber, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Leslie.
Amber Conley, superintendent of Park City Schools. KPCW News Time now, 8:42. It's the local news hour.
Earl Foote here with Nexus IT, keeping KPCW ready for the next breaking story. Nexus IT can help its customers move to the cloud to keep business technology up to date. The cloud grows with its users by offering solutions for startups, storage, and sustainability. 435-487-9099 or nexusitc.net.
Park City Transit riders, route changes are in effect for the shoulder season. Orange Silver Lake and Purple Empire Pass routes will have no service until mid-November. Daily service for the red, green, pink, brown, and white routes ends at 10:30 p.m. until mid-November. Camas Commuter maintains its regular schedule. Visit parkcitytransit.org for timetables and routes or download the MyStop app. Check out our Guaranteed Ride Home program at parkcity.org. Park City Municipal Corporation is a nonprofit organization and KPCW supporter.
It's 8:43. Good morning. Well, last Thursday, the Park City Community Foundation handed out nearly $129,000 for community grants and honored Meg Still with this year's Tricia Worthington Community Service Award. Meg and Foundation Programs Director Ollie Wilder join me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Ollie, let's start with you. With the money, how many nonprofits in addition to KPCW did you help?
Well, we helped 30 in all, so KPCW plus 29 others. Of course, we love supporting KPCW and all the exposure that you give to all the rest of the nonprofits in town. And we love the Community Fund grants. It's one of our grant programs. Last year, we gave a little over $2 million in grants total, but this program this year gave out $128,860.
Wow. And that money comes from where?
It comes from our unrestricted fundraising. And one of those places is the Community Pass Club, which is essentially ski and golf and entertainment pass where donors give a certain amount. They do get some benefits, but most of it is tax deductible. And that becomes unrestricted money. And that's what really allows us to budget for the Community Fund grants each year.
So is this fund, that amount bigger than ever?
Yes, it is, actually. In fact, it's interesting because our official budget for it this year, like last year, was only $110,000. But this year we decided to invite some of our fund holders. People have donor-advised funds with Park City Community Foundation. We invited some of those fund holders to basically top up some of these grants. So we wish we could more fully fund some of the grants. This year we were able to do that for four or five of the grants that were requested. For example, Eats Park City, our fund would probably only have funded about $4,000 of their $10,000 request, but thank you to the Lewis Family Fund, we were able to top it right up to their full request of $10,000, and that goes to support cooking classes for kids to get better in touch with nutrition and better skills in the kitchen.
Yeah. So the grant amounts range from how much to how much?
This year, they ranged from $1,000 to $10,000.
Wow.
And the average grant size, somewhere around $4,300 or so.
Yeah. Something different this year, you gave three organizations a three-year grant.
Yeah, that was a new thing. You know, the grants committee said some of these organizations, let's take People's Health Clinic as an example. We know that need is going to continue, and it's going to save them time, and it's going to save our committee time if we just acknowledge that this is something we probably want to support for a little while. So they got a grant that's renewable over 3 years without a full application being submitted, and we were really proud to be able to do that.
All right. And then you also awarded one high-impact grant. That was for the $10,000?
Well, we actually, there were a couple of $10,000 grants this time. One was to Eats Park City, the other to Holy Cross Ministries for their early childhood program, Parents as Teachers, which is just so critical. I mean, you got to get the, you know, families and kids at that early age, 0 to 2 years old. We're so glad that Holy Cross Ministries is doing that and really proud to be able to support them in that.
Okay, so who got the high impact grant?
Well, I guess that's not so much a term we use. I mean, we hope they're all high impact grants.
Yeah.
You know, the Women's Giving Fund grant earlier this year, $30,000 to Peace House, fell in that category. These are more, you know, just in general, we're trying to make sure that we support the local organizations in the great work they do.
And as we mentioned, Meg Still was again awarded with this year's Tricia Worthington Community Service Award. Maybe you can just tell us a little bit about what that award means.
Tricia Worthington was the founding executive director of Park City Community Foundation, and when she went to work for the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Team Foundation back around 2014, the organization really just wanted to acknowledge how she inspires people in the community, and so they created the Tricia J. Worthington Community Service Award. It comes out each year. This is the third year it's been awarded, and it comes out also with a $500 grant that gets to be directed by the person who receives the award.
Okay. Well, congratulations to you, Meg, for being that. And you actually just kind of turned the money right back over to a fund in the Community Foundation.
I did, yes. I directed it towards the Candy Erickson Fund. Candy was really inspirational to me when I started looking to get involved in Park City in about 2006, 2007, and really encouraged me to apply for the Recreation Advisory Board. And that was kind of the thing that started everything. It introduced me to Summit Land Conservancy and the RAP Tax Committee. So it was really exciting to be able to direct that money back to that fund.
All right. So how many organizations or boards or anything do you sit on now at this point?
Can we even count? Let's just name a few.
Yeah, so I'm on the board of Summit Land Conservancy and have been the treasurer with, I was the treasurer with them for a couple of years. Park City Rotary help run running of the balls, Park City Community Foundation and Women's Giving Fund. And then I'm involved with our Epic Promise program at Park City Mountain and Vail Resorts.
In fact, you should just mention, Meg, that, I mean, the Epic Promise team was just up at Bonanza Flat, right, just this weekend?
Yeah, we had Epic Promise Day has turned into Epic Promise Week because there's so many people that want to get out and volunteer. So we worked with Summit Land Conservancy, Mountain Trails, and Utah Open Lands and had people out on Round Valley on Tuesday doing trail work. And then I was up with a big group of people for Bonanza Flats on Saturday doing trail work, trash removal. I never knew there were so many tires up there. So it was good. I think we had about 250 people signed up between both days.
Wow. And were these just employees of Park City Mountain or from the community?
Mostly employees, but family. We had projects for little kids, too. We're doing water quality testing with some people from the different nonprofit organizations. So, yeah, kind of a whole range of people.
Well, and I had somebody else that was up there this weekend and just couldn't get over how many cars and people actually use that Bonanza Flat area.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we took buses up and just watching them turn around, I was like, oh, they're going to be tight here. So, yeah, there were a lot of people up there. We saw a lot of people hiking in and out while we were working, and they were really excited about what was being done up there and that it's protected.
Yeah. So, I mean, where does it come from for you? I mean, this notion that you want to help?
I think some of it's from my parents. I went to school for Parks and Recreation, and I had a professor there that really pushed getting involved with boards. And some of it is that it just doesn't feel like work. I'm with so many great people between Park City Community Foundation and Epic Promise and Summit Land Conservancy that it's more fun and it's more hard to limit it to just a couple organizations.
Oh, again, congratulations. Oh, thank you. Anything you wanted to add?
Sure. Just we're really proud to be able to support these organizations. And, you know, nonprofits do such amazing work in the community. So it's one of the ways that we try to make sure that everybody acknowledges that work that they're doing. So people want to learn more can go to parkcitycf.org. And we'd love to chat with them if they want to give us a call.
Okay. Ollie and Meg, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:51. It's the local news hour here on KPCW.
Support for KPCW comes from Crandall Capital and New Park Town Center, with new retail spaces and a year-round community development. Information about New Park Town Center is available at 801-303-5440.
One out of every three adults over the age of 20 have high blood pressure. Nearly 20% don't even know they have it because typically there are no symptoms. I'm Dr. Anna Catino, a cardiologist at University of Utah Health's Redstone Clinic. The best way to know if you have high blood pressure is to have it checked. Left unchecked, you put yourself at higher risk of heart attack and stroke. For information or an appointment, visit heart.uofuhealth.org. University of Utah Health is a nonprofit organization and KPCW supporter.
KPCW News Time, 8:52. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Joining me now in the studio, the director of the Snyderville Basin Recreation District, Brian Hatton. Good morning.
Good morning.
So coming up Saturday, the last movie in the park at the Fieldhouse. This is going to be a chilly one, huh?
Well, it's indoors, so that's why it makes it a little bit better. We're going to show Moana on Saturday the 23rd. And it usually starts around 7 o'clock. It's the benefit of being indoors. You don't have to wait for the daylight to go away. So it's typically a pretty fun event. And hopefully, if you're looking for something to do and you have some kids, or even if you don't have kids, come on out and check out the movie.
Okay. Is there a cost?
There's not. It's free to anybody.
All right. And you can bring chairs?
Yep. Bring chairs. Bring blankets. We try to limit the amount of food that you bring just because on the field it's kind of a pain to clean up. So if we can avoid that, great. Maybe grab dinner before and then come for the movie after.
Okay. And then coming up the 27th, the Swing for Sports Golf Tournament fundraiser. This is benefiting whom?
Our scholarship fund. So allowing any kids the opportunity to participate in our programs if they don't have the financial means. So we try to find either our camps, our sports. So we're looking for teams. We're looking for sponsors. So if anyone's interested, it's about $400 a team. And we're playing at the Canyons, and it's a fun event. Typically, we have some of the best prizes, foursomes to Touhey, foursomes to Glenwild, foursomes to Park Meadows. We have some other great prizes that the community has generously donated. And again, all the proceeds go to our scholarship fund, so letting every kid have the opportunity to participate in camps and programs.
Okay, so soccer, basketball, things like that.
Huh? Exactly, yeah. Any sport we have, any program we offer, we just want to get everybody involved in the community and try to take away any limitations that there might be out there.
Great. And then you also received a grant from Rocky Mountain Power to put more solar panels on the field house, or you hadn't put them on yet?
We have them on. What the grant was from was part of for putting them on and the savings that we're receiving. So renewable energy and utilizing that. So it was really nice to have that. I think we have almost 300 panels on our roof. I want to say 260 or somewhere around there. And I mean, just the numbers have been really good. What we've been getting from the renewable energy is more than what they expected as far as their turnaround for the energy means. So it's been really good. I mean, Rocky Mountain, the grant has been, I mean, great, helped us install those panels. So we hope to continue that success. And we have in the lobby of the field house, we have a monitor where people can come in and take a look and see how it's doing. If it's a cloudy day, what the effect is, and if it's a sunny day. So it's pretty fun to watch that as well.
Yeah, how much was the grant for?
$124,000.
Wow. And what did it cost then to put all of the panels up?
That I would have to look back into that. I don't know that number right off the top.
But lots more than that.
It did cost more than that, but it definitely helps. And hopefully over time, we'll recoup those funds.
Yeah. I mean, have you seen a difference then in terms of the electric bill?
Yes, absolutely. It's definitely made a big difference. I don't have percentages of that, but it definitely has made a big difference. And again, hopefully we continue that as we move forward.
Okay. Weather has cooled, so that's always a good thing. But you are doing some fire mitigation in both Toll Canyon and Summit Park?
Yeah, there's a fire road or a two-track road through Toll Canyon and goes into Summit Park. And what we're doing is Natural Resources Division, the Forestry Fire and State Lands. They received a grant to do the fire mitigation, so helping to create some fire breaks in there if a fire were to happen. They did some last year, and we were able to get them back again this year. And it's definitely been a great, I mean, I feel really good about it. At first, it looks like it tears up the forest, but what comes back from what they've done, and then also creating the safety that they do, I mean, I think it's a huge benefit to the community.
Okay, anything else?
Nope, that's about it.
Okay, see you next month. Thanks.
All right, thank you.
It's Brian Hatton, District Director of Basin Rec. You're listening to the Local News Hour. It's 8:57.
Josh here, owner of Estee Pizza, and delighted to support KPCW. Located at 1781 Sidewinder Drive in Prospector, Estee Pizzeria offers New York-style pizza with hand-tossed dough, homemade sauces, as well as vegan and gluten-free items. Open daily for lunch and dinner, 435-731-8970 or esteepizzaco.com.
Summit Community Power Works has a new executive director. The organization was formed in 2014 to save energy and to compete in the $5 million Georgetown University Energy Prize. The winner hasn't been identified yet, but the new director has big plans to continue energy-saving programs throughout the county. Carolyn Murray has more.